Welcome to all of you. Thank you very much for being here today. I'm going to have a bit of difficulty putting together this topic today because it's big. 2 days ago, I was told about a really interesting thing, an interesting question to discuss. And one of the most important words in that discussion was the word progress in terms of evolution. Now, this discussion between the words progress and evolution has come up before recently, so I thought it was important to discuss it today. Now, when things evolve, that doesn't necessarily mean progress. For example, a situation can evolve. Or your bodily health can evolve, but it can get worse. Yet at the same time, progress can mean moving forward. And in that case, we use a different way of expressing the word. Instead of progress, we say progress, to move forward. Now, progress generally means things get more advanced, more evolved. Somehow or another, things improve in some manner. And the interesting thing to discuss is that sometimes it seems things improve and get worse at the same time. So I was thinking about what we call progress nowadays. And in a lot of respects, we are gauging or judging our progress based on mechanical or technical kinds of progress. And it's interesting because this technical or mechanical progress is decidedly getting better and better and better at doing what it does. And we see it's going like a logarithmic curve, like this, just expanding beyond our possible imagination. Right now, my physical form in this video can be duplicated by AI, my voice can be duplicated by AI, and what I am saying can be totally written by AI. Now, we see this kind of advancement. It's like a cyclical thing. It's like each time something new is developed, it's like developing higher and higher. So we have a cycle of advancement that's going upwards. It's not that the same point at the end of the cycle is the same point at the beginning as it would be for a circle. It's going upwards in a cyclical manner, cylindrical manner. And at the same time, we see other aspects of our existence going in a cycle that goes downwards. For example, the way we're dealing with the climate, the way our air is changing, the way the water is changing, the way the temperatures are extreme. These cycles of temperatures, the cycles of nature are degrading, going downwards in a cycle. Now, it would be an easy low-hanging fruit target to say these two things negate each other, so basically we have net zero. We're getting nowhere. We're kind of like the rat running on the treadmill, circular treadmill. But I don't believe that. When I look at the way we used to think about life as devotees, and I compare that to the reality we are living in, I find some very interesting things arise. I remember thinking, well, whatever is going on in the world around me, that's just the madness of the material nature. And I will stick with the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna. I will chant and read, and I will be absorbed in the spiritual nature. And that is okay while it lasts. I mean, if you're living like that and you're not having to struggle fighting against the material nature, you can go on that way. Your thought process can be very simple. But as soon as you are faced with a reality you can't avoid, or you can't even, for example, just not bother with, you have to think in another way. I know that I remember times when Mayapur became totally flooded. They have these Maha floods, and it's just the whole place is underwater, under multiple meters of water, and snakes are floating and sewage is floating, and you have nothing, no water to drink, and everything is a mess. And actually, devotees have a very great capacity to adjust. Yet, at the same time, when one is doing that kind of fighting against material circumstances, that, shall we say, immersion in spiritual consciousness becomes challenged. So the question is that, are we actually transcendental, or are we just faking it? Now, I don't mean that in an insulting way. I mean, after all, I'm faking this entire lecture. I mean, I honestly don't know what I'm talking about. I have some idea. I got a piece of paper filled with notes. I'm not following any of them. As soon as I started talking, I somehow deviated and I said, but what was I thinking about? That makes no sense. I mean, I started to make this point, you know, that when material nature goes this way, it screws up your spiritual nature. But that's not even true. Sometimes you can make great advancement when everything's screwed up materially. Because devotees are very adaptable, because they know to maintain the spiritual consciousness, I have to adjust so many things at all times. And I had this idea that, you know, I was going to show you these spirals going up and spirals going down. And after I said that, I said, yeah, but so what? But there is a what to it. And that what is, as things advance, as things get better and better and better, building on the previous thing, that's the point. We are making a really spectacular human society that we can't even conceive of. Maha, you sound absolutely terrible to me. I don't know what you sound like to everybody else. Well, now you sound okay. Yeah, that's better. Whatever you're doing now, keep doing it. Yeah, maybe that's the problem. So I have seen that while I'm trying to say, as the technology gets more and more incredible, the consciousness gets worse and worse. And yet, that's not entirely true. Then I want to go back to another point from that first inspiring question, was that that person brought up like the movement from monarchy to capitalism to socialism, communism. And I thought, that's interesting. What I find most interesting about that is perhaps we're moving back to monarchy, but in another form. In the Vedic, well, in the time of Mahabharata, the monarchs were quite good people. The society was well managed. Everything was going quite well. But then you had this cyclical advancement of military forces, of weaponry, of domination, of ego. And then you have this monster war, Battle of Kurukshetra. All of that gone. And then monarchy turned into a selfish, exploitative thing gradually. So then capitalism arises, along with it, the democratic system, the rise of corporations, nation states of corporations. And with a small experiment of socialism. So now you have this basic socialist experiment, and you have this basic capitalistic corporation, and nowhere is the true nature of so-called communism, where people took care of each other. You have this very complex situation where the ideas of socialism, the ideas of corporate capitalism, are evolving to another kind of monarchical structure. And people are lamenting, for those who are aware, for the more village-like life. This is where you find the ISKCON or other spiritualists looking forward to the future, the village, the farm, the agrarian society. So some people are moving in that kind of a cycle. People in the corporate realm are moving in that kind of a cycle. People who are into elitism and aristocracy are moving in that kind of a cycle. So we see that the idea of progress has become individualized into particular kinds of groupings. Whereas real progress, or shall we say, evolved aware progress, would be to make compatible interactions, compatible mutual dependency of all groups with each other. One could even come to the conclusion that, considering the way everything is so specialized and disconnected, that a kind of like the four varnas are the only way to connect it again. We're seeing how people are so disconnected as individuals. They can't find relationships. Family values are breaking down. It is very hard to make community out of spiritually minded, aware people, because the idea is much easier to do on an individual basis. The easiest way to do it is to make some kind of sect or cult, personality cult, where everything is just focused on one person, and therefore everybody just kind of follows along that way. It resolves all kinds of problems. You just give your allegiance. This is like a monarchical system, where you have just like that magnificent king who will take care of you. Or you have a savior who will save you. And so the idea of progress, the idea of evolution, when it comes to human interaction, is incredibly difficult to deal with. It is very easy to deal with progress and evolution in the mechanical and technical manners. But when you're talking about the interaction of people and the consequences of it, it becomes incredibly difficult. Because money is involved, greed is involved, the desire for power and control is involved. As soon as these elements are involved, the interaction between human beings in any kind of familial or communal fashion becomes compromised. And that's also what happened at the time of the Battle of Kurukshetra. So everybody ended up killing each other. Was it better afterwards? Do we know? What happened to history afterwards? It just faded away until sometime around the Marge, Ashoka, and Buddha, we get some kind of history picking up again. Thousands of years gone. And a lot of religions started picking up in those 1,000 years after that awakening happened. And all of these religions that appeared, we know them very well, attempted in some manner or another to get people to care about each other, to get people to look towards God, who's the best one to look towards, and depend on God and serve God and love others and love people, love nature. And in the beginning, these were all great ideas. But then came power, then came control, then came money, then came ego, then came desires. These things tore apart each and every religion. You can just historically see it. But people are trying to hold on to it because it's a good idea. But even if you have a good idea, you think your idea is better than everybody else's idea. So the good idea becomes the weapon that you wield against other people's good idea. So what do you do about this? How does the cyclical nature of existence work in our favor? Has the cyclical nature of existence ever worked in our favor? That's a scary question. Look at our own lives. The cycle of birth and death. When we were young and we were young devotees, we were full of energy to just, you know, go out there and change the world. And now we're old and we're sitting in our living rooms listening on Zoom. Can we change our family? Good luck with that. Can we change our neighbors? Good luck with that. You get where this is going. And we're going to deteriorate. We're going to all just drop dead. So how is this cycle working in our favor? And then we take birth again. Okay, maybe that's a good thing. We're young. We start again. Can you imagine that? We're going to be young in a world where air is polluted, water is polluted, hard to grow food, most cities are going to be underwater. We're going to be screwed up left and right from birth. Don't worry, it's okay. We'll just have an exoskeleton which will bring us everywhere with an AI in the brain, and we'll just be with our faces with scopes, and we'll have robots taking care of everything else feeding us. One can say the only way to deal with this is to get out of the cycle of birth and death. Oh my God, another cycle, philosophical cycle, has just been completed. We started with, get out of the cycle of birth and death, and we went philosophically all here, there, everywhere. After some years, we're back to, get out of the cycle of birth and death. But yeah, that's why I felt this is the most important thing, and what's the way to do it? Well, I don't know about being in a sect or having to follow or all that other jazz. Let's just connect with the deities and just let that devotion flow and the love flow, and then at the time of death, they take us with them. That's the entire motivation behind everything I've been presenting. And often I talk about this, that, or the other thing. It's more or less trying to support that effort. I feel it very strongly that without that kind of direct experience of the deity, of Radha and Krishna, of the divine energy, how can we possibly expect to break this cycle of birth and death? And therefore, I feel that something I'm doing has some value. Otherwise, I wouldn't do it. Being successful or not is quite another issue. Then you get into words like, well, how do you measure success? How do you measure progress? How do you quantify anything that you're talking about? I can't quantify it for you. To a certain extent, I can quantify it for me. And in the same way, you can quantify it for yourselves. Do not seek out approval. It doesn't mean what you think it means. Do not seek out recognition for who you are or what you are or what you become, because that also does not mean what you think it means. And your life is not based on quantity. It is the quality of your existence that matters. How much, how many, how often. These are words that have no real value. These are corporate terms. These are terms which are in relation to somebody else's desire. And to be who you are and to express that to the deities and to just accept that without the struggle of trying to be better or to try to be good enough or to try to be anything else has no value. There's no reason to have to cyclically become more, become better, become with more stuff or more anything. This is not part of breaking that cycle, because as soon as you go for more, you're actually stuck in it. The reality of connection to the Supreme, the reality of connection to the divine energy, the reality of connection between God and us depends on us being who we are, because Krishna and Radha aren't going to be anything else. And they don't expect us to be anything else. And with that, I will stop. And if you wish to ask questions, please put them in the chat. And we'll be back in maybe, 5 minutes. Okay, I'm back. Maha, are you there? Okay. Question number one. Being broad-minded people, we can see God's energy in many places and find inspiration in life in different ways. At the same time, there is no such thing as alignment. At the same time, there is such a thing as alignment. When we are focused on our spiritual goals, does everything we are inclined to do gradually bring us to our purpose and meaning of life? Or when the alignment is broken, things deteriorate and we have evolution that brings us down? How to be broad-minded and accept God in any form and follow our feelings and at the same time not break this alignment to the divine? Well, I'm not exactly sure I understand this question, at least in the manner in which it has been presented. But I can say, I can address this question part here. Does everything we are inclined to do gradually bring us to our purpose and meaning of life? Or when the alignment with the divine is broken, things deteriorate and we have a downward motion? That's the essence. Well, let's give a practical example of how this might work. Let's say you're just doing boring, useless stuff. You might think, yeah, this is in no way helping me in my evolution, because it's not aligned with the divine. But then, at one point, being so absorbed in this boring, useless stuff, you become incredibly motivated to do something about it and to absorb yourself in spirituality. So from the point of view of just seeing the activity as it is while you're doing it and being bored to death and thinking it's useless, And then seeing it from the point of view of the long-term effect it has on you, it makes it different. You can look at it in another way, the sense that everything you want to accomplish takes time, takes effort, takes determination, and it isn't always fun or easy. So you could say that considering this and considering if your motivation is directed to ultimately bring you to a divine place, then all the things that you may be forced to go through in life can be part of that ultimate destination. Yet at the same time, if you're doing things which are working directly against that long-term motivation, you are weighing yourself down. That makes the ultimate result harder to attain. So this question started off to be an either or, but I would say it's an and situation. Both things are possible. In fact, that's the rule of life. We all experience it. We sometimes are moving forward and we're feeling inspired, and sometimes we feel weighted down and like we're moving backwards. We all feel that way. So the answer to this question is obvious. You do the best you can with what you got as long as you can. Number two is not really a question, it's a comment. And in one sense, it's correct. No, it's correct. Yet at the same time, it's very inflammatory. So everybody can read it. I don't want to put it in the recording, but it's absolutely correct. I agree with you. But at the same time, I don't want to just bring up these very inflammatory kind of subjects. Obviously, the questions 3 and 4 are just continuations of what I just said, that obviously the best methodology or the best discipline for attaining that divine nature that we seek is by constantly endeavoring in this connection. And in whatever methodology, spiritual discipline you use to do that, whatever is working for you is good. Maha, your voice is disappearing again. I think you need to have like a headset again or some microphone or, yeah. As far as spiritual discipline, there are many and multiple methodologies of engaging in service, methodologies by which one can experience the love and to develop that love of God that we wish. And all of them have value. All of them are great. And whenever I say making that connection with the divine, I am not in any way saying anyone is better than another. It depends on what gets you there. The question is, why do you need to leave this world, get out of the cycle, when you can just live within the divine nature right here and now? Sure. So another aspect of this is the distinction between living for a future development, a future plane of existence, as opposed to just being who you are in the here and now. Sure. This idea is naturally complex. is naturally difficult, because theoretically one can think in these terms, but the reality may be quite different. Well, I would say that saying that, that everything is fine by just being, this world is perfect as it is in our situation. If we're connected to Radha and Krishna, we can live here without any difficulty. That is great, especially if you're like, you know, a Goswami or a very advanced soul who is living that spiritual reality right here and right now. And I'm not saying that this optimistic way to look at life is impossible. Not at all. But generally speaking, our lives are a mixture of struggling with the present reality that we are forced to live within and continuing to maintain that connection, that contact, that interaction and relationship with the divine. So even if you are living on that extremely high platform of spiritual connection, spiritual interaction, relationship, right here in the right now, still going to die. So when you die in that consciousness, you go back, or whatever you want to say, to the spiritual realm. So I wasn't talking before about, okay, we're frustrated with the material world, we should just get out. That wasn't at all what I meant. What I meant was that make that divine interaction and relationship and just continue that after death, but without this body. It's a different way of looking at it. Because you're not going to be able to attain that platform of the spiritual reality unless you've come to that understanding of the connection with the divine in this lifetime. So there's both are going to the same place. So I'm not saying there's one way or another way. There's only one way. And that way is to enter into the divine energy now and at the end of this life, go off with it, not to come back into another material cycle. In that sense, I was not talking about some kind of liberation. I was just saying that there's no point to trying to fix these various cycles, because they always end up in a not terribly useful place. I hope I addressed the question properly. Okay, now we say goodbye. And thank you all very much. Good luck to you all.